searching podcasts for The Daily Perspective. Okay, The Daily Perspective podcast coming up.
Hello and welcome into the Friday edition of The Daily Perspective podcast. Hi there, Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host with this hour, roughly, of observation, insight, and a bit of absurdity. It's the Friday edition, April 10th, 2020. And I hope you and yours are doing well. And looking forward to a great weekend, although for most of us, every day is the weekend lately. Oh my goodness gracious. I need to upload this to Facebook, to the Facebook page for the podcast. But I've joked around about wearing a mask to go shopping, you know, and we're seeing people. I've been in places, many places in the last week or so, and seen people in surgical masks who are going into Walmart, to Dollar General, places like that. And I have questioned, should this be, I mean, what would be the best mask for me to wear if I were to go in? Because I have these things that a lot of people buy for hunting, you know, it's a face shield to keep your face warm in the wintertime, or possibly to filter out pollen while you're out doing yard work and things like that. That's what I bought them for. But I've got some of these, and I'm toying with the ideas, you know, about what to wear in case it comes down to that. I got to be honest with you. I'm not really keen on the whole idea, because I think a lot of this is very, very overblown. But I'm prepared. I'll just say I'm prepared. I know I told you the story about. Ordering masks and them coming in and they didn't fit. Well, I figured that out. They stretch a lot, and I was able to work with one of them and get it to work. So it works for me. I found out yesterday that my wife, she's been wearing hers at work because she sees a lot of people. And I've also ordered some more. And there are other places. If you are an iPad user and have been for a long time, I know, it sounds like I just totally derailed, but I'm going somewhere. You're probably familiar with Dodo Case. Yeah, Dodo Case. They're the San Francisco company that used to be a bookbinder. And when electronic books started becoming the way people read books, then, well, they had to do something to survive. And they started using their bookbinding skills to make cases for iPads. Well, and I have had one or two of them, and they're actually quite nice. They look like books. And that was one of my motivating factors, because I tended to be, at that time, in a lot of places, and my iPad was with me all the time, and I didn't want it to become friendly with someone and walk away if I had to leave it laying someplace to tend to something. So I bought a case that made it look like a book. And it really did. If it was just laying someplace on a table or a desk or something like that, and I had people tell me this, it looked like a book. I thought that was a book. But you open the cover, and there's an iPad. Well, they are also making masks for COVID-19. So if you're looking for a place to find them, there's a place. Just go to dodocase.com. That's one place to find them. Those are like $15 a piece. But that's half what some places are charging. Yes, some places are charging like $30 a piece. Anyway, there are other options. I saw a doctor on television not too long ago, earlier this week, who was talking about how he wore a bandana, and he folded a single thickness of paper towel into the bandana as he covered his face with it. And that was perfect to do what he needed to do to screen out the virus or to protect others from him if he happened to catch the virus. So I thought, well, that's pretty cool. I can do that with one of my face shields that I bought for dealing with pollen. And so I put that face shield on, and And I thought, well, that's kind of, wait a minute, let's do the whole package. And so I put on the face shield, and I put on the I put on my sunglasses, and I put on a baseball cap, and I took a picture. And I have just posted this picture to the Facebook page, the Daily Perspective Podcast Facebook page. So run, if you're listening to Facebook, if you're listening on Facebook Live right now, run over there and have a look, because I just clicked and loaded it there. And excuse me, I put on the surgical mask that I have, and I made that my personal Facebook page profile picture. So, yeah, there we go. Anyway, so take a look at that and let me know. What do you think? Is it workable for going to the DG? You know, walking into the Dollar General or maybe to Walmart? Is that look okay, or are they going to call the cops? That's just something I need to know. I have a feeling I have a feeling people might call the cops. And thanks to James, you've already said, I put up a side-by-side on my personal page, and my James Bates has already said, I think you ought to wear the blue one on top of your head instead of the ball cap. Let's take a look at something that I think is interesting. We're in the midst of, and this kind of fits into the absurdity and wow, that's brilliant category at the same time. Because a lot of people are talking about what's happening with the price of oil and how the oil companies are having a hard time because the Saudis and the Russians, are having it out against each other in order to they're fighting over oil prices. And at the same time, they're trying to damage our economy in the middle of the coronavirus, because our economy's already, it's already tanking because of what government, and don't ever forget that government has done this to us. Our government has done this to us. And as we progress forward with the coronavirus and we can get honest facts and figures, honest reports about how everything spelled out, I think we're going to find out that our government made a gigantic mistake by shutting down the economy. I think that's just me. That's what I think. I think that's what's going to happen. We're going to find out that they overreacted, and being what government is, that overarching control factor, that thing about having to be everybody's hero and tell them what to do for their own good, that has tanked our economy. Now, we, prior to this, had the strongest economy in the world, and because we've had the strongest economy in the world, I think we're going to come through it just fine, and I think we're going to bounce back, and it may take a little time on the backside of things, but we're going to come back. It's an uncomfortable period, but we're going to come back. But Russia and the Saudis are playing games with the price of oil in the midst of all this stuff in an effort to basically slip the blade between our ribs. Well, Saudi Arabia has flooded the market with ultra-low price oil to crash the market and to take out U.S. oil. This is funny. I'm sorry. I know what's coming. And by the way, thanks to Kevin Sorbo. You remember Hercules? Yeah, Kevin Sorbo. He posted this on his Facebook page. So Saudi Arabia just so happened to flood the market with ultra-low-cost oil at the same time that our stock markets were crashing due to coronavirus, as if that wasn't planned, in an attempt to crash the U.S. markets as well as to put U.S. oil companies out of business. U.S. oil producers need about $30 per barrel of oil, and conveniently, Saudi Arabia dumped oil at around plus or minus $20 per barrel. They did that to hurt both Russia and America. Well, just so happens, Obama lowered our strategic oil reserves for his slush fund and then spent the dough buying votes. So there's plenty of room in our storage facilities for a lot more oil. So instead of what would have been an economic disaster, taking the USA from being the top oil producer down to being the number one in the number of oil companies going out of business, President Trump saw an opportunity. A great deal on oil at ultra-low prices. He declared a national emergency. That freed up U.S. federal funds, which allowed him to suck up all that oil Saudi Arabia dumped on the market at a super low price and put it in the USA strategic reserves. And that's where it's going to go. That move basically sucked all the wind out of Saudi Arabia's attempt to crash the oil market and got us millions of gallons of oil for our oil reserves in a single move. kudos to President Trump. This is why it's good to have a savvy businessman in the Oval Office. He looked at the situation and said, you know, when stocks are cheap, you buy. When the price goes down on something, you buy up. Because it's going to come in handy later. And that's exactly what he's done. So kudos to President Trump for turning what was intended to be a landmine for us into a gold mine. And you'll never hear about it. Never. In fact, what'll happen is that the progressive press, if they decide to talk about it at all, will condemn him for spending the money. But we, our strategic oil reserves, were very low. We needed to replenish them, and we were able to do it at roughly $20 a barrel. That's awesome. Good news. Thank you so much. It's a good thing we have somebody like him in office, and not somebody like Cuomo or de Blasio. After weeks of criticizing President Trump, often unfairly, for his response to the coronavirus, the New York Times, of all places, has published a lengthy and rather damning piece detailing the belated and at times counterproductive response of the two most prominent Democratic leaders in New York. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio. By the way, you need to do some research on Bill de Blasio. Find out his background. Find out what he's been active in politically from his extreme young days until now. And you'll find out this guy has no business being in any office in America. Oh, also New York Governor Andrew Cuomo for finally providing a more even-handed critique of the Democratic politicians calling the shots at the epicenter of the pandemic in the United States. Some of the Times readers have thanked the paper, though many made a point of noting that the critique was coming rather late in the game. The Times report has been given a conveniently equivocal title. That is, how delays and unheeded warnings hindered New York's virus fight. Which fails to directly point the finger at de Blasio or Cuomo, but its subtitle better summarizes the content of the piece. That subtitle is, "The Federal Response Was Chaotic. Even so, the state and city's own efforts failed to keep the pace with the outbreak." The Times found... Even that more direct criticism, however, doesn't accurately present just how badly the Times found that the two Democrats initially botched their response. The report begins with the first confirmed case of the virus in New York, in New York City, March 1st, and both Cuomo and de Blasio vowing to take action that the Times learned was never taken. A 39-year-old woman took Flight 701 from Doha, Qatar, to John F. Kennedy International Airport in late February, the final leg of her trip home to New York from Iran. A week later, on March 1st, she tested positive for the coronavirus, the first confirmed case in New York City of an outbreak that had already devastated China and parts of Europe. The next day, Governor Andrew Cuomo, appearing with Mayor Bill de Blasio at a news conference, promised that health investigators would track down every person on the woman's flight. But no one did. For many days after the first positive test, as the coronavirus silently spread through the New York region, Mr. Cuomo, Mr. de Blasio, and their top aides projected an unswerving confidence that the outbreak would be readily contained, the Times reports. It goes on to say there would be cases, they repeatedly said, but New York's hospitals were some of the best in the world. Plans were in place. Responses had been rehearsed during tabletop exercises. After all, the city had been here before. Ebola, Zika, the H1N1 virus, even September 11th. Mr. Cuomo said on March 2nd, "Excuse our arrogance as New Yorkers. I speak for the mayor also on this one. We think we have the best healthcare system on the planet right here in New York. So when you're saying what happened in other countries versus what happened here, we don't even think it's going to be as bad as it was in other countries." While the Times makes sure to point to the federal response as also hampering New York's attempts to combat the spreading virus, the picture is painfully clear by the end of the piece. Cuomo and de Blasio blew it, and New York has suffered as a result. These two bozos in charge of New York State and New York City so severely dropped the ball that many, many people have died. It's a travesty. And Times readers said, thank you. It's about time somebody pointed this out. It's about time somebody actually told the truth about what these idiots have done and not done. And at the same time, these two bozos are turning around at Times and pointing fingers at President Trump and the federal response. The New York Times picking on the federal response and ignoring the fact that it's not the federal government's job to handle these things. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast. Happy Friday. Heading into the weekend, during a time in America when, for many people, every day is the weekend, except that you don't get to go have fun. Oh, that's just wrong. I don't like that. Ah, it's not a fun time in America.
That's the fact, Jack!
Absolutely true. Oh, man. Well, I hope you are well. I hope things are going nicely for you. I hope that that you and yours are doing well. I hope that life is good. And I hope that somehow you're going to have a good weekend. I just hope that somehow you can make something out of it and you can go and enjoy yourself somewhere with your family, with your friends. I mean, there's got to be a way you can make it happen, right? There's got to be a way. Well, at least I hope there's a way. I really do hope there's a way. Because life in the U.S. of A., it really, really needs to be better than it is right now. Don't you think? I think so. I really think so. Let's see. Where are we here? While I'm talking to you, I'm trying to manipulate an image to put up. And I think I'm just about there. I think I am. At least I think I am. All right, let's see if I got it. Bang. There it is. So do you think that's what I should wear when I go to Walmart or go to Dollar General, maybe to Lowe's? Like, I went to Lowe's yesterday. And even at Lowe's, they have big squares on the floor reminding you to stay 6 feet apart from people. The cash registers, you know, if you've been to a Lowe's, you know what I'm talking about. They're all wide open. It's just an aisle. It's just a wide open thing. You just walk up and chit-chat with the cashier while you're cashing out. Well, while you're checking out, I should say. Well, nowadays, they've built these frames, and they've got plexiglass up, and they've got protection up to keep people separated from one another, and you've just got a space to put your stuff on the counter, and they can scan it and take your money and such. It's different. Maybe I should have worn that yesterday going to Lowe's. What do you think? Huh? If you're watching the Facebook Live version, you get to see it. If not, you don't. Maybe later today. If you're listening to the podcast, go over to Facebook and look for the Facebook Live version of this, and you'll see. There I am. Face covering, sunglasses, ball cap. That's enough of me. Well, Joe Biden. Creepy Uncle Joe. Sleepy Joe. Dementia Joe. I don't care what you call him. The man, who was it that said it? Was it Tucker Carlson that said, can he even find his car in a 3-story parking garage? I think that's an accurate way to put it. I don't think he could. Bless his heart, too. He's got a classic Corvette. Really nice car. A classic Corvette Stingray. That for years he wasn't able to drive because he was the vice president, and the Secret Service says, I'm sorry, you're not going out and driving that. That's not happening. But he's got this beautiful classic Corvette. I would love to have that car. But I doubt he could find it in the parking deck. Well, Creepy Uncle Joe, in an interview earlier in the week, said, I'm sorry, I know what's coming, and this is just killing me. He said, the coronavirus crisis has helped his presidential campaign. Oh, really? Is that the case? You really think that's true?
What a bunch of crap.
Mm-hmm. Biden, the presumptive Democratic presidential nominee following Senator Bernie Sanders' exit from the race, which now leaves the former vice president under Barack Obama alone in the field, spoke on video to Jim Gardner, veteran anchor at WPVI-TV in Philadelphia Tuesday, about the coronavirus and President Donald Trump. At one point, Gardner said, Mr. Vice President, obviously this crisis has upended this campaign. It's made it difficult for you to be heard and heard the way you ordinarily would be under normal circumstances. And obviously, President Trump has a daily forum that's watched by millions of Americans. To what degree has this pandemic hurt Joe Biden politically? He answered, based on the polling data, it's helped me. The more he speaks, the more my numbers go up. I'm not being facetious. Wow. During the interview, Biden also criticized Trump for reacting incredibly too slowly to the coronavirus outbreak and added that he wrote a January 17th article saying the pandemic is coming and that we should be doing something about it. Actually, Biden's op-ed was published January 27th. And his gaffe on the date has been pointed out before. But Biden left his flip-flop regarding Trump's January 31 China travel ban over the pandemic. At first, Biden indirectly characterized it as hysterical, xenophobia, and fear-mongering. But then, last week, Biden came out in support of the travel ban. And while Biden criticized Trump for failing to prepare our nation to respond to the coronavirus, it has been repeatedly fact-checked as true by multiple news outlets that the Obama administration depleted and never replenished the federal supply of emergency gear, including N95 respirator masks, during the H1N1 flu, the swine flu epidemic in 2009. Now, creepy Uncle Joe's got it wrong, and something that we all need to remember, always need to remember, is that Joe Biden is a habitual, compulsive liar. He will never stop lying because it's the only way he can speak to people. He is a seasoned professional politician. He will always lie. Let's have a listen to that exchange.
I have a chance today to talk with the man who will almost definitely be the Democratic nominee for president, former Vice President Joe Biden, who was isolating at home in Delaware. You had a phone call yesterday with President Trump. He called it a delightful call, a friendly phone call. Would you care to share with me some of what you guys talked about?
Well, I'm happy to. It was a friendly call. He asked my views. I gave him four things I thought were of urgent need that he should be doing, that they should be doing, the national government. And we both agreed we wouldn't go into detail, but we'd acknowledge that we talked to one another and that if I had more suggestions or if he wanted to call me, he could.
The president has said, and we've heard these words a number of times, he has said, we inherited an obsolete, broken system that was not meant for anything like this. What's your reaction to those words?
Well, it's contrary to what his own experts have indicated. When we left office, we warned them that a pandemic was something that was the greatest concern. We had set up within the president's office, a pandemic office. All the way back in January the 17th, I wrote an article saying it's coming. We should be doing something about it. But here's the point. The president didn't cause this virus, but he reacted incredibly too slowly to it.
Lie.
And didn't acknowledge it's a federal responsibility.
Lie. Mr. Vice President, this crisis has obviously upended this campaign. It has made it difficult for you to be heard the way you ordinarily would be under normal circumstances. And obviously, President Trump has a daily forum that is watched by millions of Americans. To what degree has this pandemic hurt Joe Biden politically?
Here it comes.
Based on the polling, Dad, it's helped me. The more he speaks, the more my numbers go up. Lie. I'm not being facetious.
Wow. Biden wants to be seen as the great healer and the man who can bring people together. He told me the public health crisis will have surprising consequences.
Look at all these people that are going out there now, risking their lives to save other people. They're not asking whether they're Muslim or whether they're a Jew or a Catholic or a Protestant. They're not asking. They're just doing what has to be done.
You brought it up. Nobody else has brought that up, by the way.
The country is rallying across the board to deal with this crisis.
It sounds like you're saying that this could be a catalyst for a better world.
It can. It absolutely can, Jim. And that's what the great thing about America. We've the only nation in the world that's been able to turn great crises into opportunities.
Well, of course, he brought race into it. Race and xenophobia and the like. That's of course, the progressive perspective on everything. Everything is about race. Everything has to be. Because when you frame everything that way, then nobody can fight you. They all come off looking like horrible people when they disagree with you. Unless you're paying attention and you understand that what they're doing is framing everything in a lie. And Joe Biden is a lifelong practitioner of using the lie for his benefit. He's been doing it for decades. And I hope you caught his lies during his statements. He's misrepresenting so much. And he's really good at it, too, when you watch him. He's really good at it. But keep in mind, he plagiarized in his early days. He's lied about so many things about his life. Everything he has said and done in the past comes back to lies. He can't be trusted. And he should not be running this country. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast. It's the Friday edition, April 10th, 2020, and I hope you're doing well. Hope you're having a good day. And that this weekend, during the lockdown, you can find some relief. We were talking about Joe Biden in the previous segment. The fact that he's a liar. And he's got other track records as well. If you have done your due diligence on Joe Biden, you have found the Secret Service reports about the way he treats women and how his protective squad, his Secret Service agents, used to protect women from him if they ever came to his home, and how he would swim in the nude. He would skinny dip in his pool at the house. Just walk out of the pool in front of everybody. And the guy is not your average American. He doesn't have the same moral foundation. He doesn't have the same mentality that you and I do. And there has been recently a report from a woman who used to work as an intern for him, and she's making a claim of a sexual assault. And you're not hearing about it anywhere. Now, when Christine Blasey Ford came forward to make an accusation, which could not be supported by anyone, against Brett Kavanaugh, in an attempt to prevent him from being appointed to the Supreme Court, everybody said, well, you must believe the women. And now, that's not happening. And to add another bizarre, insane twist to this entire thing, let's invite in Alyssa Milano. Yeah, Alyssa Milano is now into the picture. There's an article in thefederalist.com, and it's an article by a woman, an Emily Jashinsky. It's from April 7th, and it says, Here are three statements about the Me Too movement made on a Sirius XM segment Monday. That's this week, Monday. One, we have to societally change that mindset to believing women. But that does not mean at the expense of giving men their due process and investigating situations. Two, I just don't feel comfortable throwing away a decent man that I've known for 15 years in this time of complete chaos without there being a thorough investigation. And three, I never thought Me Too would be something that would destroy innocent men. We don't want that to happen either. So we have to find this balance in the Believe Women movement and also giving men their due process and realizing that we're destroying lives if we publicly don't go through the right steps in order to find out if an accusation is credible or not. These quotes promote the correct approach to litigating Me Too allegations. Hardly a controversial stance in April 2020, but one that was framed as indecent in the movement's early days and later amid Justice Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation battle. The sentiments are exactly what earned conservatives and others charges of insensitivity from the Me Too activists time and again. On Monday, however, they were made by actress Alyssa Milano, flailing to defend her ongoing support for Joe Biden, who faces a serious new allegation of sexual assault. Milano is, perhaps, Hollywood's most prominent Me Too advocate. While Milano is hesitant to believe Biden's accuser without a thorough investigation, she believed Christine Blasey Ford's allegation against Kavanaugh the same day the doctor came forward in the Washington Post. Also, Milano called for Al Franken's resignation the same day Leanne Tweeden's sexual misconduct allegations emerged against him as well. On September 16, 2018, after the Post named Ford, Milano went beyond merely calling for an investigation, instead tweeting out her categorical support for Ford. That tweet said, "I stand in solidarity with Christine Blasey Ford. Hashtag Me Too." 10 days later, she attended a protest of Kavanaugh in D.C., draped in a Believe Women banner. She tweeted then, "I'm in D.C. because I don't believe any man's misogyny should take precedent over a survivor's humanity. We tried to see a Murkowski, Collins, and Hyde-Smith today and share our stories of survival. They refused to see us." Hashtag Kavanaugh, hashtag Believe Women, hashtag Survivor Strong. Milano's comments on Monday came after she faced some accusations of hypocrisy on social media over her silence on Tara Reid, the former Biden staffer who last month accused him of forcibly penetrating her with his finger in 1993. At the time, Reid worked in Biden's office, his Senate office. Her brother and friend have both confirmed she told them about the allegation after it happened, although there are no direct witnesses. Due process was a particularly damning choice of words on Milano's behalf. On October 10th of 2018, after Kavanaugh's confirmation, Milano went on Larry King's show to discuss her activism. In response to a question about due process, Milano began by saying, "Due process is obviously in the Constitution, but women are not in the Constitution. We only have the right to vote." She went on to claim, "By the way, can I just stop here? Due process is obviously not in the Constitution, but women are not in the Constitution. We only have the right to vote." What an asinine, completely idiotic, completely moronic, totally and completely uninformed, willfully ignorant statement. The Constitution doesn't deal with sexes, with genders. It deals with mankind. At the time the Constitution was crafted, the term mankind, or men, was an all-encompassing term. Everyone. Today, the progressives pick that apart and say, "You see, it's sexism. It's misogyny." No, it isn't. It's a misinterpretation on your part. An intentional, or if not intentional, moronic misinterpretation on your part. Milano goes on to claim, as far as women standing up and holding men that have abused their power accountable, we don't really know what that due process looks like. We don't know what a fair investigation, especially for this Supreme Court nomination, what that would really look like. Later in her answer, she added, really, anytime we have these conversations about Me Too, when we hear from women like Dr. Ford, when we hear from women who stand up, who are finding their voice in this process, I think we are discovering what due process means for this particular issue. To recap, when it came to Kavanaugh, whose nomination she opposed before allegations ever emerged, due process was a learning experience. When it comes to Biden, whose nomination she has endorsed, due process is a prerequisite to adjudicating guilt. Let's revisit one of her statements on Monday, where Milano called for an approach that involves giving men their due process and realizing that we're destroying lives if we publicly don't go through the right steps in order to find out if an accusation is credible or not. Had all those right steps been taken before Milano accepted Ford's story the same day she went public with it? Of course not. Now that the fog of Me Too's frenzied peak has largely cleared, Milano is extending to her partisan ally a much more charitable standard than she extended her perceived opponent. If there's a glass half full reading of the situation, it's that Milano at least seems to have landed on the right approach and is mostly being criticized for hypocrisy rather than for insisting on due process. Ultimately, I have no idea whether Milano is pure of heart and find it perfectly acceptable for people's opinions to evolve over time. It's deeply telling, however, that Milano is now leaning on her personal relationship with Biden, referring to him as a decent man that I've known for 15 years in her defense of the candidate. Milano promoted one set of standards until those same standards would necessarily condemn a man she trusts. Funny how that works. And funny is the wrong word, actually. Public figures who downplayed the importance of due process contributed to the creation of a media culture that did indeed destroy innocent men. That doesn't mean Me Too was bad or most women's accusations are false. Some are. Most, unfortunately, are not. But if Milano really believes her own defense of Biden, she needs to explain what changed. I think we know what changed. What changed was Joe Biden is not a Republican. Joe Biden is not a conservative. Joe Biden sees things through the same lens Alyssa Milano does, the lens of progressivism. Joe Biden can be a puppet, a tool of the same people who sought to fundamentally transform the United States of America not too long ago. Let's not forget what Barack Obama said.
Change will not come if we wait for some other person or if we wait for some other time. We are the ones we've been waiting for. We are 5 days away from fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
That fundamental transformation is something that Joe Biden would be a key player in. Although, not many people who are honest think he is mentally capable of playing an actual key role, a real participatory role in this transformation. He is the only opportunity that the progressive movement has to get back in charge and back in power again. At this point of today, right now, April 10th, 2020. And so, because he is the face of the progressive movement at this point in time, as far as national politics is concerned, she's going to stand behind him. She calls him a friend. Do their families get together for barbecues? Do they hang out with one another? Compare notes about schools? What do they do? I seriously doubt that happens. She likes Joe Biden because he's the progressive candidate. She uses the double standard because she doesn't like conservative candidates. She'll condemn anyone else who stands against her progressive views and give anyone who stands with her progressive views a pass. And thus we see, in one example, the progressive mindset. And another example of why it's bad for America. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast. Hi there. A masked Mark Congleton, your sometimes humble host. Keeping you company until we get finished with this final segment for this Friday, the 10th day of April 2020. Ah, man, oh, man. I'm just skimming through things during the break as I usually do, and Michigan has banned travel between residences. And I'm pulling that story up now. In a draconian move, the Democrat Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer has made a significant change to the state's stay-at-home order and now bans residents from visiting other homes, including neighbors, with limited exceptions. Effective Saturday, all public and private gatherings of any size are now banned in Michigan. All public and private gatherings of any size. Wow. Until now, travel between two Michigan residences has been permitted, but beginning tomorrow morning, that will end, except for purposes such as caring for a relative, an elderly friend, or a pet, visiting a nursing home or similar facility, attending a funeral with no more than 10 people, or complying with a court order related to child custody. Whitmer said at a news conference, all public and private gatherings of any size are prohibited. People can still leave the house for outdoor activities, and outdoor recreational activities are still permitted as long as they are taking place outside of 6 feet from anyone else. What's uncertain right now is whether or not law enforcement would be actually willing to enforce this draconian and likely unconstitutional order. This is progressive politics in action, my friends. That is what is happening right now. Progressive politics in action. Now, there are a lot of reasons that places like Chicago, Detroit, and the like are having issues. One of those reasons is that going around social media in the black community in these big urban areas is a myth that black people are immune. I don't know if you knew that, but that's something that's actually happening, is that people are spreading the myth. It's a rumor, it's a lie, that black people are immune to the coronavirus, which is not true. Not true at all. And the black community is being impacted in a rather heavy-duty way. It's really hitting them hard. And it's behavior-related. It's behavior-related. If you ignore the warnings, you expose yourself. It's your behavior that does it to you. Okay, let's get back to behavior again of somebody else. I was talking about Alyssa Milano during the last segment. And in the last few minutes we have, let's turn up the spotlight on her insanity. Shall we? Despite the multiple reports showing that hydroxychloroquine is a success, Alyssa Milano, actress and political activist, wants President Trump impeached for promoting the anti-malaria drug and has alluded that he is somehow making a profit off the drug. You may have seen your progressive friends, your liberal friends on social media saying, yeah, he's making money off of it. He's making money. He's profiting off of it. That's why he's recommending it. How sad for them. How deeply sad for them. She says, Trump can make history as the first president to be impeached twice. I mean, if putting lives in danger by pushing a drug for personal gain during a pandemic isn't impeachable, we should just throw in the towel. The Times said, If hydroxychloroquine becomes an accepted treatment, several pharmaceutical companies stand to profit, including shareholders and senior executives with connections to the president. And they add a small personal financial interest in Sanofi, the French drug maker that makes Plaquenil. That's the brand name version of hydroxychloroquine. Milano reacted to the story from the Times, Howard. They failed to mention that the stock is worth as little as $99. Now, here's the facts. Your progressive, your liberal friends are trying to claim that Trump is making a fortune off of this. One, you have to remember, the drug has been around for a long, long time. It is well beyond the generic state now. So it can be sold as different brand names. It's the same drug with different brand names. It can be classified, I believe, if I'm not incorrect, as a generic. So it's not making a ton of money as it would be if one company could make it. They can all make it. Now let's look at what John Carney over at Breitbart had to say. The report cited by the Huffington Post is from a New York Times story that said Trump himself has a small personal financial interest in Sanofi, the French drug maker that makes Plaquenil, the brand name version of hydroxychloroquine. Trump's personal financial interest, however, does not include a stake in Sanofi, and the New York Times did not claim it did. And instead, Trump's financial disclosures show that his three family trusts each had investments in a $10.3 billion Dodge and Cox mutual fund, and that mutual fund owns shares in Sanofi, the world's fifth largest drug maker by prescription sales. As of its latest disclosures, those holdings amount to just 3.3% of the fund's holdings. Trump's most recent financial disclosure forms list holdings in the Dodge and Cox International Fund valued between $1,001 and $15,000. That means Trump holds a maximum stake in the mutual funds of $45,000, giving him an indirect interest in Sanofi of, are you ready? $1,485. That's the max. His personal interest. And it's an indirect interest, I might add, because it's just part of a huge package, is about $1,500. His financial interest in Sanofi, which has a market capitalization of nearly $58 billion, actually could be as low as $99. Journalist Mike Cernovich also pointed out how bogus the report was, saying, according to Trump's financial disclosure, he owns between $1,000 and $15,000 of Dodge and Cox fund. Dodge and Cox's fund has 2.9% of its money in Sanofi. Trump owns 2.9% of, by the way, $1,000 to $15,000. Trump owns $29 to $435 worth of stock. New York Times didn't think anyone would do the math. Alyssa Milano just didn't think. She just reacted. Just like when the doctor taps your knee with that little rubber hammer to check your responses. She reacted. Orange man bad. Making profit on drugs. Orange man bad. Impeach orange man. That's Milano's response. So please remember that when the leftists are wailing and moaning, screaming, clutching their pearls and gasping and talking about how evil Donald Trump is, they're never getting the facts right. Whether it's from long ago during the campaign, grabbing women by their bleeps, or today, making a profit off of hydroxychloroquine, their perspective, their examination, their entire concept of what he has to say and what he does is not what they present it as. It just isn't. Going back to the to that tape with Billy Bush, the Access Hollywood tapes, he was clearly talking about women who throw themselves at celebrities. Groupies. Groupies have been around for as long as there have been celebrities. Even in the days when stage plays were fresh and new, women would line up at the stage door to try to woo the actors on the stage, the leading men. It's been around for ages. And that's what that was about. It was about groupies. Not about all women, but about women who throw themselves at famous people. That's what he was talking about. Alyssa Milano is a person who knows this because she is a part of that culture. Alyssa Milano is disingenuous. She's choosing to believe the lie because the lie is convenient for her. And that goes for today as well, about hydroxychloroquine and the president making a profit off of it. So please get today's show notes, grab this article, copy and paste it to wherever you need to so that you have the truth about hydroxychloroquine and the fact that our president may be making as much as $1,500 or as little as $99 off of his monstrous share in the company that, in one of the companies that is making hydroxychloroquine. Always be armed with the facts, my friends. Always. And have a great weekend. Yeah, the weekend is here. I know you didn't know it, did you? But the weekend is here. God bless you. Have a good one. And we'll meet you back here Monday for the next edition of The Daily Perspective. Bye-bye.
Knock off now and take the next 2 days off. How's that?